You're listening to Going Deep with Aaron Watson.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of Going Deep with Aaron Watson. We do not have a guest today. We have a topic that I have been really getting into over the last year. It is fascinating for me and in some circles very popular, in others taboo or even a ridiculous thing to discuss, and that is extended or intermittent fasting. There's plenty of other podcast hosts who also are really into this, so apologize if you feel like I'm beating a dead horse, but I'm coming at it from the background and the perspective of a career in athletics. So many of you know, I won 2 national championships with the University of Pittsburgh's Ultimate Frisbee team. Did that in 2012 and 2013, and in 2014, read a really interesting article in GQ about a guy who used a 5-day water fast to cure an autoimmune disorder in a medical facility. And it just captured my imagination. You know, we've all suffered from different health things that have gone on in our past. And, you know, different medications don't always work. They have adverse side effects. And I was looking for some alternatives. And before I go on, this is not medical advice. I am not telling you what to do with your life. I am trying to share my story and the stories of a few other folks for whom fasting has worked, but I am not making a prescription or telling you to try something without consulting a medical professional. That being said, during my 2014 season, I actually experimented a little bit with fasting, and it was new, it was a shock to the body, and you know, still in the midst of training, it actually was not ideal for me because of how hard I was going in the gym and on the track and on the practice field to recover from a hip surgery. But now, 3 years later, it is a regular practice of mine. As you'll hear from one of our snippets, there's an app called Zero by technologist Kevin Rose that I use to track my daily fasting. And there's a number of different ways that you can do it, but I wanted to start off by just addressing the concern that many of my peers, many of my friends have expressed that fasting does not coincide with athletic performance, with muscle building, with these other foundational elements, foundational roots of appearance and performance and beauty that we are all taught. And I just find that to be patently false. Now, I'm not a professional male model or anything close to resembling that, but Terry Crews, the famous actor, and you may know him as a spokesperson for Old Spice, has an absolutely amazing physique and is a believer in fasting as well. So he's going to be our first anecdote here on using fasting, because we'll put a picture in the bio. This is a dude who definitely has built some muscle and has done it while fasting as well. So here is Terry Crews on fasting.
My first meal is at 2 p.m. and then I eat from 2 to 10. Over the last 5 years, I have been doing intermittent fasting. And so what happens is I work out very, very early in the morning, but then I don't eat. My first meal is at 2 p.m. and then I eat from 2 to 10. Now, then the times I don't eat, in a fasting period, which is a 16-hour fasting, I drink amino acid drinks. I'll have coffee, maybe tea. Sometimes I'll have a little coconut oil on a spoon that makes you feel a little satiated, that kind of thing, but it's never a meal. And then once I get on my meals, it's good. Now, the problem with intermittent fasting is that you never want to have a bad meal because you're like, I waited all day, 16 hours for this. Over the last 5 years, it's really kept me in great, great shape. They found scientifically, there's a thing called autophagy. Autophagy is when the cells in your body are rebuilding themselves. It's one of those things where when you go without the food, it's really strengthens your cells. The cells are trying to rebuild and they're trying to do their thing. And it's a wonderful thing. It's kind of like renewed. Once it's done digesting, the body's done working with food, it starts to work on other cells in the body. I can feel the difference. I literally can put pictures of myself now versus pictures of myself at 22 years old. And I look and feel much better right now.
Now, that concept of cells perpetually dying, new cells being built, old broken cells being replaced, is a different way to think about your body. And if you didn't take a lot of biology classes, if you don't just spend much time reading about health and wellness, it's not a concept that you may be familiar with. And it actually calls to me back to the story of Jason and the Argonauts. And as they were traveling, their boat, the Argo, was receiving damage. And at each stop, they would take a piece off, replace it with new wood. The carpenters on board would rebuild different parts of the ship until at the point at which they arrived at their final destination, every single piece of wood of this ship had been replaced. And that calls to mind some funny philosophical debates of what is identity and is something still what it is if every piece of it has been replaced, which we're not trying to get into today. But that idea that no singular piece of yourself is here to stay and that each part can be replaced and upgraded or at least kept from decaying is a really important mindset to bring to the management of your body and understanding that nothing is permanent, nothing is going to be a part of you forever. So that is a big realization for me and leads to the experimentation with fasting. That's kind of my philosophy with all this stuff is you will need to try it out, experiment with it. And you can't say something doesn't work if you've never tried it. So intermittent fasting for me, there's a number of different forms. And there are folks that do 2 days where they just fast and 5 days of the week where they don't. There's folks who do really extreme few days per month where they eat almost nothing. I've struggled with all of that. It's made me feel weak and just kind of out of it. So I prefer to really hold off on having breakfast most mornings. And this, in addition to self-experimentation, was something I learned in a recent podcast on Patrick O'Shaughnessy's Invest Like the Best, where Dr. Peter Attia came on. He is I'll let him explain.
So it's hard for me to explain what I do because I don't have a one sentence answer, but and the one sentence answer sounds so glib and silly that I'm usually too ashamed to say it. But if forced, I would say, I'm a physician and my interest is in maximizing human longevity. But then you have to define that because many people don't really know what that means. And so I think the simplest definition I have for longevity is lifespan and health span. It's a product of those things. Now, whether it's an exact dot product or not, I mean, it's irrelevant, but it's a mathematical function that could be described by those things. Now, lifespan's easy to explain. So if you draw, an X and Y coordinate, the X coordinate would be time, and therefore lifespan is how long you live. And then the Y axis would be some measure of that quality of life. And so I call sort of that Y axis the health span axis. And the function then starts at, zero and say one, right? So time zero and one meaning, maximum health span. And as you move through your life, the curve moves to the right and more or less monotonically decreases with a couple of features, right? So if you just think averages, the average American's probably going to live to about 80 right now. You could argue, divide that by socioeconomic status, but just keep it really simple. 80 is when the graph, the curve will cross the x-axis, meaning lifespan ends. At about 40 is when it starts to take its first noticeable dip. So, most people are kind of doing pretty well till 40. For example, when you turn 40, it's when you start to, without doing something very deliberate about it, lose about 1% of your muscle mass a year. That's highly associated with many of the things that result in a decline of health span. The other point to notice is, assuming we stick to this number of about 80 being when it ends, by the time you hit 70, you're generally about halfway down the y-axis. So if we started at like a unity of 1, you're at now 0.5. So that means that you'll spend, 70 years declining to half of your capacity, and then in 10 years, you'll sort of really unwind.
And this focus on longevity and health over the long term, like anything, is an investment. And Peter Attia gets that deeply from his background in finance. And it's just really interesting to listen to how he thinks about fasting.
So with those things in mind, the question becomes, how would you make that better? And I think one of my mentors was a great thinker, and he was very disciplined about the following. He said, never try to solve a complicated problem without explicitly being able to state your objective, your strategy, and your tactics. We tend to think a lot of things that go wrong and that appear suddenly. you know, so-and-so died of a heart attack. Oh, you know, so-and-so got cancer and within a year they were dead. And as tragic as those things are, we have to remember none of those things happened in a moment. Nobody just has a heart attack or just gets heart disease or even just gets cancer. These things are occurring for generations before. So actually, probably the first paper I ever worked on in my life as a medical student was a review article. You know, we ended up, I don't even think it got published, but I spent a year writing it. It was on the entire mathematical literature of tumor growth rates. And so it turns out there are many different models to model how cancer grows, but they all had one thing in common, which is a cancer spends more than 80% of its life undetectable because it is just simply so small. So, you know, your cancer needs to get to about half a centimeter in diameter before you'd even have a chance of knowing that it's clinically relevant. And by that point, it's already been 80% in existence. You know, heart disease begins at birth. What you're really asking now are what are the tactics? And it's basically anything and everything that you can manipulate that can move that those levers. And in my view, it really comes down to everything about how you eat. So that means how you eat, when you eat, what you eat, how you sleep, how you exercise, how you manage external stress, what drugs you take, what hormones you take, what supplements, et cetera, and learning the ability to avoid harmful behaviors. Because the second thing to triangulate on is looking at the species where we can do experiments, which is every species but us. And so we typically in science will divide the world into sort of four buckets. We'll go from the most simple, which would be yeast, to flies, worms, and mammals. And that's an interesting sort of spectrum because that spans a couple of billion years across evolution. And it's pretty easy to find things that work well in one of those populations or even one species. And that could be interesting. But when you find something that works across that entire spectrum, it's really interesting. So at least to my surveying the literature, there are really only three things that are common across those billions of years of evolution. The first is that some combination of caloric restriction and dietary restriction seems to offer benefit. Now, the nuance around that is so important that it probably doesn't warrant a discussion now only due to time. But you know, for those listening and interested, the answer is not caloric restriction. I'm very confident saying that the answer is not just eat 60% or 70% of your required calories for the rest of your life and that's going to do it. Though that has worked in some animal models, I'm completely convinced it does not work in the real world for a number of reasons that are absent in the control animals. And secondly, frankly, I think most people would be too miserable that even if it did work, it would probably not be a viable option. But cyclic fasting might, right? So there's four different types of intermittent fastings, and we can maybe talk about...
Can you describe those? Because I think that this is a really interesting topic.
Yeah, so we can think of caloric restriction as outright caloric restriction versus things that mimic caloric restriction. So we call those things CR mimetics. So the CR mimetics I put into a couple of different categories. One is daily intermittent fasting, which means if there's 24 hours in a day, you will not eat for 16 or 18 of them is typically what you would do. So I typically do that almost every day. So, you know, I won't eat my first meal today till 3, maybe 4, but usually no earlier than 1. And then I'll, you know, sort of wrap it up within 6 to 8 hours. So 16-8 and 18-6 would be kind of two popular formats of that. Then you have fasting regimens like that of, you know, Walter Longo, where he's promoting something called a 5-25. So for 5 days a month, you consume a very hypocaloric diet. It's 750 calories the first day, then 500 calories a day for days 2, 3, 4, 5. And then days 6 through 30, you're consuming ad libitum, meaning you consume what you want. There's a 5-2 protocol where you consume 2 days a week, you fast, 5 days a week, you consume ad lib, etc.
Now, when I tell people about fasting and they talk about wanting to try it for themselves, it's actually very similar. You know, people who listen to the show know that I read a great deal. And I also get a lot of emails and other folks asking for book recommendations or how to start a reading habit. And with both of these things, you have to start small and get some small wins. So to try to flip the switch and just say from now on, every day, I'm going to not eat until 1 p.m., is frankly kind of ridiculous. If you have the, you know, 99th percentile willpower, then sure, you can probably do it. But more likely, you need to experiment with it, give your body a sense of what that feels like, and understand how your body is going to respond. The first couple times I did it, I would be successful. Maybe I'd even go beyond what my goal was for not eating, but then I'd just eat garbage. I'd think I had accomplished something and celebrate by just shoveling sugar and bread and other processed carbs into my body, which is not an ideal fuel source, and kind of cut the benefits of the fasting that I had experienced. And instead, I've slowly gotten better about getting more vegetables into my diet and lean meats to go along with that. But it's just really interesting how much this trend is picking up, how many more people are experimenting with it, many people using coffee to stave off hunger. The caffeine is a good inhibitor of that appetite. But Dr. Atiyah is not the only one who's really excited about this. Dr. Rhonda Patrick is another health and wellness expert. She's been a big advocate for using saunas, which I've also been experimenting with a little bit as well. But she has gotten really exciting about fasting recently and talked about it on the Joe Rogan Experience.
The other, you know, one of the things that when we were talking about the muscle mass, I started thinking about this time-restricted eating. Have you heard about this at all, time-restricted eating?
A little bit.
Like eating within like a certain time period that correlates, you know, corresponds to like the day.
Mm-hmm.
It has really profound effects on muscle mass without any other factors, without having to exercise or anything. That's something that's extremely interesting. But this like time-restricted eating is, it's very important for health and metabolism. It's also something I've been obsessed with since like probably early summer. I've been doing it like just, you know, really fanatically making sure that I'm eating within like a no more than 12-hour period. I try to do like 10 hours. So like when you wake up in the morning, you have a cup of coffee or, you know, you eat even a cup of black coffee. The first thing you put into your system that's not water starts all these metabolic enzymes, starts them in your liver, you know, your gut, starts these enzymes. And those enzymes are on a clock because humans are diurnal creatures. We're meant to be awake and working and active and thinking during the day, and we sleep at night, which is different from nocturnal creatures like some rodents and other animals that are, you know, sleep during the day and active during night. So because we are active during the day, we're diurnal, all of our metabolism enzymes and all these things are active during the day. And things that activate them are light exposure and also food intake, and xenobiotic is also something. So anything that gets metabolized like by your system, by your liver, whatever, activates these enzymes. And once they're activated, they're on this like 12-hour clock where it's like, okay, so you're metabolizing glucose, fatty acids, all these things, you know, well, if you're eating within that 12-hour clock. But when you go beyond that 12-hour clock, that's when things start to go really wrong, because your metabolism enzymes start to shut down and they're not doing things properly. So you're not like insulin responsive. You're not even fatty acids and things like that. Just metabolism in general is not working as well, you know, after 12 hours. And so that's kind of a big eye opener. I know there was a lot of people think they eat a 12-hour time period. Like if you were to survey them, like, oh, yeah, I don't eat more than 12 hours. But there's actually a study done by a friend of mine who's a expert in this field. He's at the Salk Institute. His name is Sachin Panda. Very good scientist. I interviewed him on my podcast, and he's, you know, done a lot of research on this topic. And he did a human study where he had like this app where people logged they took pictures of the food that they ate, and it like, you know, sent it to some database they had, and it had a timestamp on it. So they could, you know, see when their first cup of coffee or whatever was in the morning, and then when they were eating at night. Turned out most people were actually eating in a 15-hour clock. So they were having their cup of coffee, you know, at 8, 7 in the morning, and they were, you know, they were eating at like nine, 10 o'clock.
Right.
Yeah. So they're eating much later. The thing is that like when you do that, you start to gain more fat, you start to become more insulin insensitive, and you start to like your muscle starts to waste.
Regardless of what you eat?
Regardless of what you eat. So okay, no, I take that back. So if you eat healthy, if you're eating a terrible diet, that's, and this has been shown in mice, like lard, fat plus sugar, those two together, which is the actual the bad combination.
I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm going to make a note, but keep going.
Those two are the bad combination. So if you eat it, if you're eating that, if you're feeding the mice that, and you let them eat whenever they want, so they can eat. They're nocturnal, but I'm just going to call it day, and their day is actually night. Just know that that's true. If they're eating during the day and night, they gain, like, you know, tons of weight. They become fat, become, like, type 2 diabetic, fatty liver. I mean, they're just a mess. They're breaking down, like earlier than they should. But if you eat normal, so if you're eating, like, a healthy diet that's not high fat, high sugar, you're not necessarily going to gain more fat. You don't become type 2 diabetic and all that if you're not eating all the crap. So you're probably just going to be okay. But if you take that same mouse who's eating a healthy diet and you make it eat within a time-restricted window of at least 12 hours, actually the best was 9 to 10, they gain way more muscle mass. This is on a normal diet, just way more muscle mass. And if they ate within a 9-hour window, they had like really improved endurance. And that's something I've noticed in myself. If I eat within a 9-hour window and I go for a run the next morning, my endurance is like very noticeably improved, like extremely noticeably improved.
So do you have like a timer? Like how do you time yourself at the beginning of your day, like when you first eat and then...
Yeah, so I typically, my friend Kevin Rose has an app that, like, it's called, Kevin Rose has an app.
Kevin Rose from Dig?
Yeah.
I've had him on. Love that guy.
Yeah, he's awesome.
He's a big ketogenic diet proponent as well.
Yeah, he doesn't actually do keto anymore because
when did
he stop? After he got a bunch of blood work done, and I mean, there's different, you know, genes that people have that can affect the way they respond to that sort of diet. Most of the time, people can respond good, but
that's interesting because he was on here just wasn't that long ago, introducing Zero, a new app to help you fast.
So he has an app that helps you do that actually works really well. Personally, what I do is I'm just kind of crazy about it, and I just like remember it that day. So I'm like, okay, I had my first cup of coffee at 8 a.m. But his app actually is really cool because it really helps you keep track and it sends you reminders. So like helps you, and it's a free app. So
with all these experts, I'm encouraging you to do your research. I'll link to that GQ 5-day fast and these other folks and their full interviews, which are well worth a listen, although they would take a lot of time. My recommendation, my challenge to you would be to try a fast at some point, whether that's a full day, whether that's a couple extended mornings, and recognizing in so many other facets of our life, we're realizing that there is a great deal of embedded wisdom from our ancestors and their behaviors and their rituals and their habits. And across almost every religion, there is a habit or a practice of fasting, whether that is to heal, whether that is ceremonial, whether that is related to deep meditative states. It crosses cultures, it crosses eras and ages, and has seemingly worked for a large amount of people. I think it could work for you, but you have to dip your toe into the pool and try it before you find out. If you try it, or if you are thinking about it and need someone to be accountable, need a little bit of willpower on your side, please reach out to me. I've made my information readily available, but once again, at AaronWatson59 on Instagram and Twitter. Would love to hear how it works for you and what the results were. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening. Connect with Aaron on Twitter and Instagram at AaronWatson59.